The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Keep that mind on your mission on your mind. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman. He is, of course, the Montgomery Area Food Bank, MAFB.org, if you'd like to help out anytime. And, of course, the show not only about non-for-profits, but also about business in general. We take your email questions, info@TonyCurryRadio.net. We got some of our best emails we'll get into here in a little bit. And next week's show, we're going to be getting into March Madness. Michael, have you filled out your bracket yet?
Actually, I have.
Have you already?
Bracket. Yeah, all right. I actually filled it out. Yeah.
Okay, good.
And I will tell you, I feel like with this bracket, if every team that I root for is now cursed to lose, because that's usually how it happens.
Yeah, well, I hope you ain't got my Musketeers going all the way. I'd like to see my Xavier Muskies, my 3 seed, at least make it to to Elite Eight. So we'll see what happens. And we're getting some regional games here in Birmingham, which is super cool. So we have to actually watch some basketball here as well. All right, info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Thanks to the thousands of folks who have downloaded the TKR app. You can hear the show at least 5 days a week. Mission Minded. We got a brand new show we're going to be starting up here to benefit the Montgomery Food Bank coming up here in the next few weeks. And of course, you can also hear us wherever you get your podcast at Tony Curry Radio's podcast network. Check us out. We're on every major indice. Are you ready to knock some of these out?
I sure am.
First question is, and I thought this was good, and it's short and sweet. Nick in Tuscaloosa, what exactly is pay transparency in the workplace? I know that you and I could compare what we're making, but is there a law that concerns pay transparency? And I think it's based on the number of employees you have.
So this issue of pay transparency really is defined on where you live and whether each state governs that. But really it's the idea about making a salary structure across an organization open to both other employees, but also to external factors as well. I think back to the military, you always knew what other people in the military made based on what their rank was and how many years they had in the service. So that was the first example if I have ever encountered that. But a lot of employees don't like doing that. And the reason is they're not all nefarious, but lots of times employers who want to make sure that they are saving every dime that they can. If an employee says, hey, I need $40,000 and that position normally pays $45,000, then that person's, gonna squeeze that $5,000 out. And so people who operate like that are really not looking for more transparency. And who ends up typically suffering are the employees. I think it affects their salary. Now, I will tell you, we don't share here at the food bank exactly what everybody's making, but we do have a salary range. And every salary in the organization has a range. And that range is based off compensation data that comes from Feeding America for like positions, as well as when we can't find that, if we have a position that doesn't exactly match that, then you can go out on Indeed, you can go out on other, I think it's payscale.com, but some other websites, and you can put in, here's what the job title is, here's the area you're in, and it will come up with at least an average of what somebody in that position is to make. And I think it's really good to go to that model and for a lot of reasons. I get that there's some risk. You may be paying somebody more because you threw them a couple extra $1,000 because you thought you were going to lose them. And you may regard this position as being just so critical you can't afford to do it. And so somebody else comes along and goes, wait a minute, I've been here longer than them. I've had just as much responsibility. And now I've paid you this. Now they're going to come at you and hit you up as well. And that's part of the transparency challenge, is everybody else can look at what others are making. It can be very, so I see it on both sides. I see it from the employer's perspective that you're going to cause people resentment, that people will start evaluating themselves against other employees. Why is this person making more? They don't try as hard as I do. Their position is not as important. So you've got this constant upheaval. But from an employee standpoint, I think it helps build trust across an organization. I think it helps them see what is compared to the organization, where they stand in terms of what their value is, at least from, you know, a financial perspective. And I think it forces the organization to make sure that they are compliant with any laws or regulations, but also just how they value, how they're setting that standard. Let me give you just a quick anecdote. I've come in behind managers or CEOs before who set the salary requirements, and they will tell somebody that they're going to pay them X amount of dollars, and that person goes, okay, I'll take that. I'll see you in 2 weeks. So they come back in 2 weeks and nothing was written down. Nothing was documented. And the figure they come up with now is, they said, well, you offered me 45. And he goes, I think I offered you 41.
Uh-huh.
You know? And so, and those kind of things right away leaves a bad taste in that employee's mouth. So from day one, he feels like, hey, you're trying to rip me off. And just being transparent across the board, like I said, is can be a very good practice, but it looks like it's one of those situations to where you better make sure all your ducks are in a row, because if not, other employees are going to have the opportunity to call your hand on.
Well, let's talk about a documented man, get it in writing, and it's don't think you're asking too much. If they're making the offer, make sure you get it. I remember the Birmingham News, I think they used to have something like what they make. They'd show a picture of 50 different people, and they'd have everything from nurses to school teachers to radio personalities to TV people and stuff, and what they made. It was pretty interesting. I think we always, you know, we look at sports. It's the only thing in the world in sports where, you know, everyone's salary is available to anybody. I could pull up a contract of an offensive lineman for the Bengals. I'm like, thank goodness they can't do that with us. info at TonyCurryRadio.net. Info at TonyCurryRadio.net. You're listening to Mission Minded. Julia in Birmingham. this is interesting. She says, are there any Alabama laws about racial diversification in the workplace? Must you hire a certain individual, I guess? And she also says, and who does Michael think it's easier to manage, men or women? She said the working goes, it's a lot easier to raise a little boy than it is to raise a little girl, but the girl turns out better because she's more organized and into her thing. I know we're broad brushing here, but she wants to know, who does Michael think it's easier to manage? And you certainly manage a lot of people in your life. Well, let's start with the first question. Are there any laws about racial diversification in the workplace?
Yeah. So it's not, if you have an organization that's 50 or more, there's a federal law that applies to you. You have to report those statistics and to Equal Opportunity Office. And so you have to show the breakdown of gender. You have to show the breakdown of ethnicity. You have to show your breakdown in terms of your leadership and employees and all of that. And it's mainly just for research data. But you can bet, where it becomes a challenge is if somebody files an EEOC complaint and you have to answer that complaint. I will tell you some of the things that I've had to do is if you replace a white person with an African-American or a person of color, that white person complains, you're typically not going to have a chat. You know, it's no issue. But if it's reversed, one of the things people say in the EOC has taught us is if you don't have it documented that you've been working with this person, this person's been failing for some reason, because lots of times people just fuss, they don't document it, and then they get totally frustrated and they fire somebody, but they have no documentation of what they've done and what's been done to try to develop this person. And so I learned a lesson the hard way is it had nothing to do with the person's race.
Yeah.
But if you don't have anything documented, then the person goes to EOC and goes, look, I don't have any documentation against me in my file. My last evaluation was very good. So then it's left up to them to begin to fill in the blanks. Well, then why would you dismiss me? Okay, is it because, and then start looking for reasons. Well, if it's not based on my performance, or at least documented performance, well, is it because I'm a woman? Is it because I'm handicapped? Is it because I'm a person of color? Is it because, if people start filling in the gaps, and then you may think, well, absolutely, it's not for those reasons, but because you didn't take the time to document what you were going through, it leaves you so vulnerable.
Yeah.
So let me say this, when you go into any business, there is not, you have to have a certain amount of persons of color, a certain amount of this gender or that gender. You do not have to have that. But I think it's foolish not to be mindful, not because of lawsuits, but because different people from different backgrounds, of course, it depends on the size of the organization as to how much diversity you may be able to have. But I think more diverse organizations, people from different backgrounds and different perspectives, especially when you're in the nonprofit world and you're focused on the public as a whole, I think it's just wise to be able to bring in different perspectives.
You are listening to Mission Minded. Keep your mission in your mind, your mission here. He's Michael Coleman, Montgomery Area Food Bank, formerly, of course, the Jimmy Hale Mission. He's run non-for-profits his entire life. And lots of business questions we get. We could talk about anything you want. info@tonycurryradio.net. Make sure you check out our podcast. It's blowing up and doing really well. Wherever you listen to your podcast, you're probably listening now. Nathan and Hoover.
Hey, Tony.
Yeah.
Hey, well, when do you get to the second part of that question?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I was giving you an out, man. I was giving you an out because I didn't know if you wanted to answer that question. Yeah.
Well, the truth of the matter is I don't want to answer that question, but I also don't want a reputation for running away from the hard one.
Yes.
So I will tell you, the truth of the matter is that I end up, as a whole, I have hired way more women than I have men. And the reason I have seemed to hire more women than I have men is because women as a whole, of course, there's exceptions to all this, but women as a whole that I have worked with pay greater attention to detail, I just had better success. Now, I don't go into it thinking man or woman,
yeah.
But I'm just, when I look back and evaluate, I've had more women, and I've had more women who are just seem to be able to multitask better and do a lot of the just get down into the nuts and bolts, into the weeds, and be able to take care of business.
Is there a feeling that women, let's just be honest here, women are more compassionate, nurturing, and caring than men, and so they're better at non-for-profits? Let's be honest,
well,
right?
Yeah. So there's a certain element to that, because even men who, you know, I consider myself somebody who is compassionate and somebody who cares about their society, but I'm also somebody when it comes to, I don't have a nurturing spirit, so to speak. I'm not as patient as I need to be. There's a lot, so many faults. And when I'm dealing with the public, especially people that are hurting, they may be hungry, they may be going through emotional trauma, circumstances that have led to their food insecurity. Yeah, as a whole, women are just better at that than men, being able to relate and connect and exude that empathy. I will tell you, of course, it's so funny. I will repeat something. I've always got a story, so I will tell you the story.
Yeah.
So I had a board chair who was a woman.
Uh-huh.
And I had an office. They weren't all women, but the majority of them. And this particular issue we were dealing with was all women involved.
Uh-huh.
And she made a comment that the worst thing in the world is to get, you know, just all women. I said, well, you're a woman and you can say that.
Yeah.
I'm not allowed to say that. It doesn't matter whether I think that or not,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not allowed to say that. But I will tell you, it's so funny, the number of women who have said, we need to get a man in here just to break up the dynamic.
Yep.
And of course, I think all men or all women, neither one are healthy. It doesn't matter if they're persons of color or not. I think that's why you a diverse group is just a better group. So when I talk diversity, I'm not talking about just ethnicity. I'm talking about men and women. But women as a whole have been my more reliable, I will say, employees as a whole. And in terms of, that's very positive about women. The one thing I tell you what, the one thing I will say is lots of times there's just a lot of, talk, not gossip, like water cooler gossip. Yeah. It just more seems to be when you have more women, there's more of that talking behind each other's backs.
Mike, do you wish I had cut you off now and you just went on the next
question? Now there's audio difficulties.
Hey, you wanted to answer the question. No, I totally get it. And listen,
I'm too transparent.
Yeah, you know what that problem is? It's a marriage. It's a marriage. I mean, anyone's been through a divorce has realized that when you're in a marriage, the man has his role and the woman has a role. There's things the woman does. The wife or the husband does a lot better than I can. And there's things that I do that she doesn't like to do. And together we work. And then when you're a single parent, you realize you got to do it all. And all of a sudden you're learning on the fly. And so definitely, I think that's.
And one's not more important than the other. It's just the roles are just different.
Right on. And that's where that kind of goes along with our whole diversification of the workplace. I think it's super important.
Right. Thank you for bailing me out of that.
No problem. Info at Tony, coming from a single man. Info at TonyCurryRadio.com. Net. Nathan in Hoover has got a little issue here. He says he runs a company with about 20 employees. He has one employee who is the best of the best. He's like, I got the best guy in town that does this mid-range level job. This guy knows it and he wants either a title, more money, or both, but he doesn't want to take him out of his position because he feels like he'll never find someone that can fill his shoes. And so now the guys come back saying, let's just pay me even more than you were going to give me for a title, and I'll stay in this mid-range level job. What should I do?
Well,
that's a tough question. I mean, I will tell you,
it's one I encounter always. When I've encountered good people before, going through it right now. And here's what I did. I actually called, I think it's better to be transparent. And I called the guy in, because we were going through this, we had this huge influx of change, and he was, even though he was relatively new, he was the one steady force in that whole change. And so I called him in and I said, hey, listen, there are some positions that you may be interested in. I think it's, I want to let you know, you have the opportunity to apply for those, and I'm not going to hold you back in any way. I'm not necessarily encouraging you to take that, even though I want to see you progress in the company because you are so vital right now. But I want you to understand it's not my intent to punish you and keep you here, because that's in essence what you're doing. You're putting your needs, and I get it as a business owner, you are putting your needs ahead of what's in the best interest of the employee.
Sure.
Because what's in the best interest of the employee is to continue to progress. So what you've got to do is find that right balancing act. How do I help him get to where he wants to be, while also being able to, manage the company's needs? Well, first of all, let me tell you, I totally get the fear, but even though that guy is doing you a great job, there are others out there who could do the great job. You may not have them in your company right now, but there's others who can do that. What you definitely are going to do is end up losing him if you don't do something to meet that dissatisfaction. So if he says, I will keep this mid-level, but you're going to pay me like a higher level, the question you have to say is, what is it going to cost me to lose him?
Yep.
Because if you lose that person, and you will, because if they're competent, they know they have options out there. And if you lose that person, you got to think about, what is it going to take? Now I don't have that guy in any position. All right. So it would be better, in my opinion, to move him up, even though you lose him out of this vital one, and then help use him to train the best employee you have to come into that position. But you've got to make sure his needs are satisfied, or he's going to definitely leave you, and then it's going to leave a gaping hole. And then the time you're going to spend rehiring somebody, training them, the loss of productivity, all of that is going to be much larger than any potential pay raise you're going to give them.
Boy, and there's never a better feeling for an employee when you know you have your boss over the barrel. I mean, it's happened to me only one time, and unfortunately, I didn't realize it at the time when I went to ESPN and I came back and all of a sudden I had gold pens and I had the best seat in the house. And I'm like, wow, what just happened here? And I had no clue because I was so happy just making my money and doing radio and did not realize they would have given me probably twice what they were offering. But at the point in time, you know.
Right. Yeah. You didn't know enough to take advantage of
it. I did not. Great questions. info@tonycurryradio.net. I think we got time for a couple more. Steve in Austin, Texas, is starting a non-for-profit. He wants to do it right. He's heard our show. He wants to have 5 board members. He wants to know what's the rule on board members. He says he has one guy who's a friend of his who keeps asking to be on my board, but he's kind of a bossy type, and he's afraid that if he's on his board, he's going to kind of run the show, and he's like, that's not how it's supposed to go, ? Correct?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not supposed to go like that.
Let me ask you, have you had people, and I know you've been on boards as well, have you had people say, hey, listen, I want to be on your board? And how does that make you feel?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, it depends on who the person is.
Yeah.
So I've had people who say, had a conversation with, and I'm like, man, it would be really great to have that person's influence on the board. Because that's what you want. You want people of influence. I tell them, a board member needs to do one of two things, either write a big check, influence or affluence. Either you're writing a big check or you're opening up a door to people through your network and your connections that you're introducing to what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And so the last thing you want is somebody who's going to, if you're starting a nonprofit, the vision is within your control. So in your mind right now. So you know how you want to build that. Now the board comes in. And the board says, okay, here's the mission. It's our job to make sure you keep it between the lines, that you don't, go too far left, too far right. And not politically, of course, but just between the lines and that you stay focused. We have this fiduciary responsibility to make sure that all the finances are spent appropriately. So, but they are not intended to come in and then be your boss. They're your partner in this. Yes, they do have an authoritative role. Yes, they could remove you. But you want somebody who is equally sold on your mission, whatever that mission is, excited about it, and wants to come in and bring whatever help they can bring. So if that guy is saying, hey, I want to help you launch, I want to help you get off the ground, here's what I can bring to the table that could really serve this organization well. That's a great board member, but if you just know he has a very dominant personality and you're afraid of that, but you still feel like you might want to bring him on, sit down and have a conversation.
Yep.
Help him understand that what the role of the board member is and that your concern is that based on who he is, that he's going to come in there and try to take control and then wrestle the vision, if you will, away from you or prohibit you from carrying out the vision as you are imagining right now. So always communicate that. I would go to him and have a straight face-to-face and just say, if you don't feel like you can do this, and we're not talking about just general oversight. You're talking about, because when I started my program from scratch and I had a vision of what I wanted to do, I went and communicated that vision with people who were close to me. And we had that open conversation and I started with 5 board members as well. Legally, you have to have 3 board officers on any board. But I think 5 is a great number to start with. You don't want too many cooks in the kitchen. But you want diversity in that. And then they were people who knew me, trusted me. I trusted them. But it was also people that I understood I was under their authority. And so I was trying to be very careful, like you said, about not bringing in somebody who would dominate and take over, because I was the one bringing the vision and the passion every day to grow this and to carry it out. And I was looking for a board who would support me, encourage me, help with fundraising, help keep me on the straight and narrow. So I was, they had that authoritative role.
Mm-hmm.
So, but people who do not understand the role of board members, and they want to get on there and they want to take control of it, you will spend your whole time frustrated with that person. They will not be a productive board member. They'll run you crazy.
And do you grab your board members before you actually start the business, or do you have the idea first and then say, this is what I'm doing, would you like to be part of it? Or can you do a little bit of both?
Well, when you actually apply to the RS, you have to list by name who your board members are going to be, your starting board members are going to be, who are
Okay.
your officers. And so, yeah, that has to be actually on the application to the IRS. So when I did, when I had my idea, I went and did the business plan. I took it around. I showed people my business plan, kind of got their feedback, and then said, hey, I'm looking for about five good board members. Would you consider serving at least for the first year? I mean, the first term. And then if it's going well and you want to stay, great. If you feel like it's time to get off, but, and I'll tell you my board, this is just a throw in, but just real quick, when I had the board, when I started, I needed board members who were dot the I and cross the T people. I didn't need big visionaries then because I was in a world where we're trying to get all the documents, we're trying to get the bylaws established, we're trying to get all that. So I needed very detailed people. But after we got through all that, then we started getting into the practical about how we're doing this, how we're serving the community, how we're meeting those needs. When we start talking about casting vision, I found out that those board members were not great for that because they were not great vision people. They were great detail people. So if I could go back and and do it all over again, I would have started off very intentionally with a mixture of that so that you didn't have an all or nothing. And I had almost all detail people. When it came time to transition, it was very difficult to transition that group because they were still looking inward, and I needed board members to begin to look outward at growth.
There you go. He's Michael Coleman. I knew you'd have an answer for it. Keep those emails coming. Great questions. info@tonycurryradio.net. info@tonycurryradio.net. We try to do an email show at least once a month. And coming up next week, we're going to be talking about March Madness. We'll see if Michael's bracket is busted by then. He's going to be talking about how to keep the madness out of your business and also spring cleaning. Some of his little things he's learned over the last few years, last 20, 25 years running his own businesses, and what to do to keep things clean around the office. Tell people how they can find you, Michael.
Yeah, they can find me on LinkedIn. They can go to mafb.org. Anyway, I'd love for people to reach out to me if you have questions or thoughts or any ways I can help you with your business. Be glad to do what I can.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.